seniors at Wichita North High School and other high schools too have to complete a senior project. Is my mic on? Can you all hear? Okay. It's a semester-long project that includes research, a specific experience or activity, a mentor, writing a paper about your findings, and then making a big display board of your project. The projects are as varied as the students. One senior that I know designed and made her own piece of clothing. Another researched grading scales and protocols for other school districts. Another shadowed a professional like a doctor or a lawyer. Another invested money in the stock market and watched what happened to that money. So when our son Ian was a senior, he came up with this idea to spend some quality time with Wichita's homeless population for his project. The first time he mentioned it to me, his plan was to spend an entire 2 weeks on the street. It was tempting to get rid of him for 2 weeks. But I put a quick kibosh on it. He ended up going after school and staying through the evenings during the weeknights, and then 2 48-hour periods on the weekends. So when he was out his first night, I wanted to pack things for him, like especially a sleeping bag and maybe a pillow. Money, I thought, would be helpful. Food, he refused. By then, he had gotten acquainted with people on the streets, and he had learned about their lifestyles and their personal stories, and he didn't want any advantages over the people he had befriended. Ian reported his experiences and truly enjoyed meeting some of the people he did and talking about their lives. He found them fascinating. I can't tell you how many times I have bragged about his experience and what we all learned through him. But what I haven't said is that this is a project I would have never considered doing myself, and one that scared the pudding out of me just thinking about him doing it. Now, don't get me wrong. I want to be an advocate for the homeless. I'm happy to write a check for the Lord's Diner or Interfaith Ministries to assist with homeless missions. I believe we can stop chronic homelessness, but I'm not into sleeping outside with them. That is what hundreds of people in Wichita do, however, and around the country, each year, sleep outside one night to bring homelessness to the attention of the general public. Some people march on Capitol Hill to make public their stance on a variety of other social ills. The Bible uses a specific phrase to describe this kind of activism. It's called pitching your tent. When you pitch your tent, you become like family. The Bible actually describes the social bonding between those who have tents next to each other and those who eat at others' tables. But it's more than just a social bond, because pitching your tent or eating with another means you had ethical obligations to each other. For example, quarreling and harsh behavior weren't allowed because it did not build up the common good. So Abraham and Lot, their stories of moving from one place to another in the ancient world describes the two of them carefully choosing where they're going to pitch their tents, because they knew it wouldn't work to pitch a tent on uneven ground or where you were vulnerable to attack. They also knew that where you pitched your tent would affect your life, your home, your friends, your security, your future. Now, later the Bible talks about where we will pitch our tents. And Acts 2:26, one of our traditional word texts today, says, "Pitch your tent in the land of hope." Isn't that a beautiful, short saying? Pitch your tent. Pick where you're going to be, but make sure it's in the land of hope. Now, many ancient writings, including our Bible, indicate that where you pitch your tent has social and ethical implications. The bylaws, for example, of the Guild of Zeus forbid making factions. And in the apocryphal book, Sirach, the Jewish sage who was devoted to, he devoted in his writings a long section on meal etiquette. And he said, judge your neighbor's feelings by your own, and in every manner be thoughtful. Wish I had a neighbor like that. My neighbors may wish that they had a neighbor like that. So a meal together breaks down social, political, religious, and other distinctions that are made between people. It's a theme that is found as early as Homer, where, as he called it, equal banquets are said to characterize the dining habits of heroes. The equality that lies at the heart of the ideal communal meal is reflected also in the Passover tradition. The liturgy of the ancient Passover was that the poor should also be able to recline equally at the table at Passover and receive at least 4 cups of wine, even if the funds had to come from public charity. I'm liking this dinner. How about you? Now, the ancient meal traditions formed the beliefs and the practices of the first century Christians as well. And now, our communion service is meant to bind us together. So we come to the table as individuals, and we leave as family. Drinking the wine and sharing the bread is a dangerous prospect, says the Apostle Paul. It's dangerous. Dangerous? The table? How is that so? He says it's dangerous to receive communion if you're not ready to make a commitment to the people next to you and the people outside the building and the people in the community. You need to pitch your tent with them. Are we willing to share communion with those outside our walls? So what does that look like in the modern world? Here are some ideas, practical ideas of how to put this idea into practice. First, when someone has a death in their family, even if you don't know the person well, because we have shared a church home and communion with them, we reach out to them with visits and calls, food and hugs. When we disagree with one another, the first thing we do is go straight to the person with whom the disagreement is and talk it out, or at least try to talk it out, before going to others outside and talking to them. That's because we've had communion together. Another idea, when we are personally hurting, we fight the tendency to keep it to ourselves and sort of withdraw from the church. Instead, we bring our vulnerability with us, and we allow other people to care for us. Because we share communion and community as a church, we put the needs and the interests of the community above our own individual feelings. We serve others, even when we're tired. We show up, even when we're not sure we have time. We encourage and we defend, even when we are feeling down. Because we share communion and community as a church, we give generously of our time, our abilities, and our resources. We sort of rearrange our personal wants so that we can participate in meeting the needs of our community. So those are some practical applications of how we pitch our tent in the land of hope and share bread with one another. And this is all about the spiritual pathway of an activist. At the heart of activism is the belief that all people were created in the image of God. I thought about having you turn to someone nearby that you don't know very well and looking into their eyes and trying to find God in them, but I decided to describe it to you and ask you to do it this week. All people are created in the image of God. All means all. So the homeless guy who may smell or be mentally ill, the woman holding a sign asking for money, the immigrant with or without paperwork, the imprisoned, including murderers and sex offenders, the angry teen who misbehaves and says mean things. See, an activist takes pitching your tent literally and is willing to stand up to the status quo for the sake of another. An activist pitches tent in hope for a better world. An activist holds the bread and the wine at communion and thinks about his or her responsibility to advocate for those who aren't at the table. Classical theologian Karl Barth urged Christians to pray with the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other. Now, I'm not a Karl Barth fan, by the way, but I agree with him on this one. Our prayers and our hopes are seen in the actions that we take to make a difference in the world. When we vote, when we advocate for someone, when we teach a child, when we take a stand, when we're praying with the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other, we're pitching our tent. We're making our faith pertinent to our world. We're pitching our tents in the land of hope. When we break bread together, we become personally responsible for each other, literally and spiritually, socially and physically. That's what communion means. It's why the word communion is also used as a description for a group of believers. You might be of the Methodist communion. You might be of the Presbyterian communion. We are people who make commitments to be in community with one another. Now, you can see that I took a little bit of a different way this morning with our sermon series about spiritual pathways, and today's pathway is the activist. And that's because I think it's time that we put our faith into practice, not just learning in our heads about how people express faith, but actually living in that spiritual path long enough to see the passion and the beauty of each pathway. So how many of you think you might be an activist? Melody, raise your hand. I'm not picking on you. I just know you in various venues. I know you. Yes, there are some of us who are. So this week, if you're not an activist, I would invite you to invest energy in an activist role and see if you might try on this spiritual pathway. Pitch your tent, so to speak, by writing a letter to a political leader about some issue of justice, or participate in a march or a demonstration for something you believe in. I want to see you on TV with the sign in the air. Or you can volunteer at the hygiene pantry or another location to assist those who are less fortunate. Be creative in finding your own way to reach out and advocate for someone else. Take communion, literally, to someone who's not here and might feel isolated. I thank God for people like Ian who, without pillow or blanket, without money or food, go and pitch tent with the homeless. I'm grateful for those who stand up to societal wrongs and advocate for justice. So let's celebrate the faithful people who visit the sick, mentor the children, go to the prisons, march in Washington, and put their faith into action. I give thanks to God for activists. Amen. The choir is singing our choral benediction to teach it to us. So I'd invite you to stand as you're able and listen as they sing and join in if you choose. You'll notice in the last couple of weeks that Mike Miller has done our postlude at the organ. He's one of the WSU students with whom we are blessed. And so if you choose today, we actually have 3 more minutes before worship is over. You're welcome to just sit and listen as he plays and celebrate this gift of music from him. As you go out into the world, find a place to get active, to be an advocate, to reach out to someone less fortunate, to feel the bonds of community, and to be God's face in the world. Amen.